And now we bring you the story of pickleball, the fastest growing sport in America, and the billionaires slap fighting to control it.
The thing that makes pickleball distinct is the thwacking sound that is made when paddle hits perforated ball. It is a signature sound that either sends you running far, far away or makes you want to play another hour or two. I'm John Walters. I'm a writer and also a professor at Arizona State University. I've just written a story on pickleball. Pickleball is the fastest growing sport in America. And so in that brief time, the meteoric rise of pickleball, there have been a number of folks who've realized there's money to be made here. How do I make that money? I was introduced to this pickleball story when I heard that there were two pickleball halls of fame. And I said, why is there even one pickleball hall of fame? That seems silly. The fact that there are two instantly intrigued me and I had to know more. This is an excerpt from the story that appears in Sports Illustrated. This section is titled Dinkers and Bangers. By the fourth hit, a point is distilled into dinkers and bangers. To dink is to gently and repeatedly lob the perforated ball over the net, almost lulling your opponent and spectators to sleep. Eventually, though, someone opts to bang, to whack the ball from fewer than 5 yards away, setting off an exchange of rapid-fire shots, a slap fight with paddles. Seymour Rifkind is a banger. Some people think I'm a disruptor, says the single most disruptive force in pickleball. If there's a single person who's the reason that I started exploring this piece, it's Seymour Rifkind. This was someone who was inserting himself into the structure of pickleball uninvited. The more I heard about him before I met Seymour Rifkind, I thought he was sort of a nuisance. The very first person I called for the story was Seymour, expecting him to be sort of a villain. But he was anything but that. Here's how I described Seymour Rifkind in the story. Upon first encounter, Riff may incite an eye roll or two. A self-made millionaire through his advertising firm, he has completed an Ironman, earned a black belt in Taekwondo, run the famously unforgiving Badwater Ultramarathon, and bicycled solo from coast to coast. All of this after his 50th birthday. He is someone who finds what needs to be done, finds a way to get it done, and sometimes doesn't really care whose feathers he ruffles in the midst of all of that. He's also, by the way, the son of a Holocaust survivor, which sort of informs his connection to how important making every day is. So I set up Dinkers and Bangers as a way to set up most of the feuds that appear in the story. The metaphor would be this. A dinker is someone who methodically approaches a problem and maybe is so methodical that it seems glacial in terms of the way they get things done. A banger is someone who just hammers through the door and figures out a way to get it done and smashes a few things on the way. Seymour Rifkind is your banger. And Pat Murphy and the USAP are sort of dinkers. There are folks who would say that Seymour lit a fire under the organized structure of pickleball. He was a threat. There are two pro pickleball tours. We have a dinker in Ken Herman and a banger in Connor Pardo. There are a few different people who've decided we're going to take this chance and try to start a pro pickleball tour because no one else is. The irony of this is that Ken Herman, who started a thing called the Association of Pickleball Professionals, and Connor Pardo, who started something called the Pro Pickleball Association, got into it at almost the very same time, independent of one another. Ken Herman is in his mid-50s. He comes up through tennis. He is a good, obedient person. A very likable guy, very hospitable. Connor Pardo is a renegade. He's in his mid to late 20s. His family is in real estate development in the Southwest. They are very entrepreneurial, opportunistic. There are a couple of major differences between these pro tours. The main one is that the PPA, run by Connor Pardoe, has been purchased with a contingency by billionaire Tom Dundon. And so there is a billionaire backer of one tour, and there's another tour that's almost like a mom-and-pop operation. When the PPA was purchased by Tom Dundon, Tom Dundon became very Machiavellian. They locked up the number one player in pickleball, a young man by the name of Ben Johns, and they signed him to a 3-year exclusivity contract where he gets a guaranteed appearance fee for every PPA event that he does, but he is never allowed to play on the APP tour. Once they locked up Ben Johns, they went around to the other best players in the world and said, "We have Ben Johns. You have a very short time window here to sign up with us with this 3-year exclusivity tour, or else you don't get it." We're not talking a lot of money here, by the way. We're talking less than $5,000 a weekend. Most of these players are all making their money, by the way, with sponsorships and endorsement deals with paddle makers. So it's not really even about that. But Tom Dundon, a billionaire, was offering some players a $1,000 a weekend appearance fee. Well, if you've got to fly from Florida to Arizona to play in a tournament, you're barely breaking even anyway. And the way he did it, which was basically informing them over Christmas vacation and giving them less than a week in some circumstances to make this decision, was seen as sort of putting his foot on their neck. Tom Dundon is not the only billionaire involved in this story. There's a man by the name of Steve Kuhn, who, curiously enough, made his first fortune as a portfolio manager at Goldman Sachs in the 2007-08 era. That might be something worth looking into. His specialty was mortgages. That's another story altogether. But Steve Kuhn made hundreds of millions of dollars, and he decided to eventually move to Austin, Texas, purchase 90 acres of land, and create his own Charles Foster Kane-esque Xanadu. He calls it Dreamland. Dreamland has pickleball courts, a miniature golf course, it has a music venue, and it also has homes. And what he is trying to do is basically create a space that will be the epicenter of pickleball in the United States. He wants top pickleball pros to live on this land. He will give them the houses. But what he also has done is create something called Major League Pickleball, which is actually less of a tour and more of, I call it like a pickleball palooza, pickle palooza. One weekend of the year, he offers way more prize money than anyone else. He gets the best players in the world from both tours to come to his venue and play. This was done for the first time in November of 2021, and everyone thought it was a one-off. Everyone thought, this is great for the sport. It's great for players to make some extra money. And Steve Kuhn, by the way, is a very likable guy, and he put on a great show. Here's the problem. Once Tom Dundon bought the PPA, and he's based in Dallas, Texas, Steve Kuhn realized, I need to basically go up and kiss the ring of Tom Dundon to make sure I can get PPA players to compete in my next Picklepalooza. But when he went up to meet Tom Dundon in person in January to say, I would like to be able to have Ben Johns and the other top players on your PPA tour play in my Major League Pickleball event, Tom Dundon's response was, they will play in Major League Pickleball when I own Major League Pickleball. So as I said to Steve Kuhn, this reminds me like a scene from The Godfather. You don't buy me out, I buy you out. The tale of two pickleball halls of fame, which is why I first was so intrigued by this. Of course, you might ask, is there anybody famous for playing pickleball? The answer would be no, at least right now. Seymour Rifkin looked around and said, there's no Pickleball Hall of Fame and nobody at USA Pickleball. No one there seems interested in starting it, so I'll start one on my own. And he paired up with Steve Kuhn, who owns Dreamland, and said, like, we should do this. And Steve Kuhn said, great idea. Eventually, the United States Association of Pickleball, USA Pickleball, said, wait a second, like, we are pickleball. How is this guy creating the Pickleball Hall of Fame? So feeling a little bit threatened and feeling a little bit as if Seymour Rifkin had stepped on their turf, they announced the formation of their own Pickleball Hall of Fame. Eventually, the USAP backed down and said, we don't want this smoke. This is a year later now since this happened, and there's still no actual brick-and-mortar Pickleball Hall of Fame. There is a kicker to this story, though, and the kicker is this. Pat Murphy, who was the head of the International Federation of Pickleball, who received a no-confidence letter from everybody, almost everybody in the International Federation of Pickleball, he has announced that he is creating his own separate Pickleball Hall of Fame in Utah. And I think that is Pat Murphy's last shot at Seymour Rifkin. Like, you think you have a Pickleball Hall of Fame? We've got a Pickleball Hall of Fame. If you're keeping score, there have been 3 Pickleball Halls of Fame announced. None actually exist yet. The barrier to entry to pickleball is very low. It's more social because you're closer to people. You don't have to be in as good a shape in terms of your knees and your, you know, your rotator cuff and all that sort of stuff. There's lower incidence of injury. I do believe pickleball will become as popular as its biggest proponents are saying. I don't see why it cannot become a high school sport and even perhaps an NCAA sport. But it's definitely something you can teach an 8-year-old how to play and also an 88-year-old how to play. And that universality of pickleball, that's why they're pounding the tables about how popular this game can be. Rafael Nadal going against Novak Djokovic, that is a level of athleticism that pickleball will never replace. The difference is more people can play pickleball than ever pretend that they're Rafael Nadal or Novak Djokovic. Pickleball was invented in 1965 in the Pacific Northwest, specifically Bainbridge Island, right off the coast of Seattle. And with all due respect to pickleball's origins, I find a wonderful metaphor between the game now and where I live in the desert outside of Phoenix. Everybody loves living out here because the weather is beautiful and the desert's got its own character to it. But you can love it to death. You can build and build and build and build more homes and build more franchise restaurants. And eventually the desert's disappeared. You've loved it to death. What was it that you first came out here for? What was it that made you fall in love with Arizona? It's the sunshine. What are you doing inside? It's the saguaro cacti. Why are you paving over paradise? To the pickleball people, I would say, play pickleball. That's why you got involved in the first place. Stop worrying about governance, stop worrying about profit, and just remember what made you love pickleball initially, which is getting outside and getting off your butt and playing a game with people who are your friends or will be your friends. All of the other stuff, you've lost the forest for the trees. That's what I would tell most of the folks who have gotten high blood pressure because of wrestling for control of pickleball.